a strange, strange game. Strange, awesome, strange. You don't even know my real name. It's a strange game. You got to carry a flame in this strange, strange game.
Hello, comrades, and welcome back to Season 5, Episode 1 of Spectre. And how better to launch Season 5 than with this project that we've been working on over the festive period. South Africa's national liberation struggle against the apartheid regime stands in history as an epic struggle, with participants from across the world. It's a subject that we've covered in this podcast with the legendary London recruit, Steve Marslin. The leading forces against apartheid, the South African Communist Party and the African National Congress, became outlawed and forced underground. As such, they were forced to work under clandestine conditions in order to achieve national liberation. They had to combine mass political struggle, armed resistance, underground networks and international solidarity. The most important of these was the conducting of clandestine work and operating underground. One of the resources produced to ensure the success of clandestine operations was a pamphlet published by the South African Communist Party titled How to Master Secret Work. At a time prior to the advancement of smartphones, computers, CCTV and satellite technology, this resource delivered fundamental methods of secret work, showing that organised workers could outwit the high-tech and ruthless state security services of the capitalist class. In this episode, we will explore the fundamental teachings of the South African Communist Party. And by tuning in and taking note, you too will be able to master secret work. We'll break down the 21 points mentioned in this pamphlet. This pamphlet is available online, free to read, or in a physical copy, the first 10 pages of which can be purchased at Manifesto Press. Number 1. An Introduction to Secrecy and Secret Methods. Why is secrecy so important? It gives us protection by starving the enemy. State security services, private enterprises, fascist militias, etc. of information about us, and it aids us to build a strong and disciplined revolutionary movement capable of overthrowing the ruling class. For centuries, the ruling classes have fought tooth and nail to keep us exploited and oppressed. They use the most cruel and sinister methods in order to retain state power and control the means of production. They use unjust laws, birthed in the bourgeois parliaments, to ban, banish, imprison and execute opposition. They use secret police, soldiers, spies and informers in order to crush our struggles. But we know how to fight back and we use secret methods of work to strike against them. The history of the workers' struggle around the globe is full of great examples. The partisan brigades of World War II, the fight against apartheid in South Africa, the international brigades in Spain, insurrection against Nazi Germany in the very heart of Berlin, the struggles of Latin American communists, the Red Army faction in West Germany, and all ongoing secret work today that cannot yet be revealed. The ruling class casts the illusion, especially today, that it's impossible to conduct illegal work. They boast and trophy the bodies and lives of the many martyrs of the workers' movement and national liberation struggles, and mock, through the use of the bourgeois press, those locked up in prison. Our struggle isn't without such losses. However, the success of our struggle lies in our refusal to forfeit and our mastering of secret work. Unsurprisingly, secret work and methods are based on both common sense and experience. However, they must be mastered like an art. You must first master discipline, vigilance and self-control before you can truly carry out secret work. Revolutionary organisers against the Nazi British, American and European war machines that have never been captured have done so because they have had to live a life totally underground. However, for the many of us who have a legal existence, we must display the qualities previously referred to. If you're listening, then you may already know that secret work involves the use of codes, passwords, safe houses, networks, and so on. It's not enough to just know this from TV and film. The rules and topics of secrecy must be studied. Such topics are how to set up a secret network, rules of secrecy, overcoming surveillance, forms of communication, technical methods, and how to behave under interrogation. 2. Setting up a secret network. Secret networks aid us in overcoming problems created by the ruling class. Under clandestine conditions, the network must lead the workers in the struggle for state power. It should not compete with the progressive legal groups, parties, and forces, but it will seek to reinforce them. Point A. Only serious and reliable people should be included in a secret network. Leaders must study potential recruits carefully, ensuring they're politically clean, determined, disciplined, honest, and above all else, sober. They must be the calibre of person that can keep secrets and defy the enemy, even if they are captured. Point B. Recruiters should be organised into acute cells of 3 to 4 persons. The cell must be this small in case of arrests or operational failures. The leader of each cell will be the most experienced person. The cell members must not know other members of the network. Point C. The cell leader will be the only one in contact with a more senior member of the network. They receive instructions from this member and send reports. Point D. A small committee of the most experienced people leads the network, a typical size of 2 to 3. This specific cell may be in charge of a factory, a location, a town, or a city. For a visual representation, grab a pen and paper and sketch the following diagram. This diagram, along with the rest in this series, will be posted in the comments of our Twitter page, @SpectrePodcast_, for you to ensure yours is correct. Also, be sure to refer to the diagrams laid out in the online copy of How to Master Secret Work, which is in the link of this podcast description. So, start by drawing 3 small dots on both the left and right side of the page. Above these dots, draw a larger dot. Draw lines connecting the smaller dots to the larger dots. Now, draw a larger dot raised in the middle of the 2 larger dots. Finally, connect a line from the larger dots to the much larger dot. Your sketch should resemble something of a triangle, and again, refer back to the resource. Your small dots representing your cells, larger dots representing mid-level command, and the largest dot representing the wider network. Point E. Members must only know information necessary to fulfil their task. Everyone, from the top to bottom, must have quality cover stories that protect them. These legends, or stories, hide the real work being done. For example, a secret meeting in a park should be made to look like a chance encounter between friends or acquaintances. The use of theatre and acting is necessary. That way, if they're questioned, they provide the legend that they bumped into each other and had a discussion about football, a story in the news, or any other pre-arranged script. Point F. All members of the network must be given code names and identities. These must have good supporting identification and documentation. A great amount of time must go into creating solid legends in order to protect members and the network. Point G. When not in use, all illegal documents, literature, reports and weapons must be hidden. Special hiding places must be built for this. Don't put everything into one hiding place. Break items up. Codes should be used in reports to conceal sensitive names, places, actions, etc. Point H. Leaders must ensure members are trained to the highest standard of secret work. Point I. Technical methods, such as invisible writing, codes, disguises, and all other forms of spycraft and fieldcraft, must be mastered. Point J. Specialisation. Once the network has been developed, different cells should specialise in different crafts, such as agitation, sabotage, combat, factory organisation, marksmanship, explosives, trafficking, etc. For now, you should focus on creating legends. After all, what innocent reason would you give if a police officer, friend or work colleague finds how to master secret work or any notes you're taking about this episode in your possession? 3. Rules of secrecy. Carelessness leads to arrest. Loose talk and strange behaviour attracts attention of police and state agents. Security work needs vigilance and care. Rules of secrecy help to mask our actions and overcome difficulties created by the enemy. But first, let's study the following situation. What follows is an example of what not to do. X, a trade unionist, also leads a secret cell. He phones Y and Z, his cell members, and arranges to meet outside the cinema. X leaves his phone and rushes to the meeting 30 minutes late. Y and Z have been anxiously checking the time and pacing up and down. They finally meet and the three decide to go to a nearby tea room where they have often met before. They talk over tea in low tones. People from the cinema start coming in. One is a relative of X who greets him. Y and Z are nervous and abruptly leave. When X is asked who they were, he hesitates and, wanting to impress his relative, replies, quote, "They're good guys who like to hear from me what's going on," end quote. This opens the way for a long discussion on politics. X has made many errors, which would soon put the police on the trail of all three. These seem obvious, but in practice, many people behave just like X. They do not prepare properly, rush about attracting attention, fail to keep time, do not cover the activity with a legend, talk loosely, and more. Others pick up the bad style of work. X should set a good example for Y and Z. To avoid such mistakes, rules of secrecy must be studied and practiced. They might seem obvious, but should never be taken for granted. So, here's a few things to remember. Point A. Always have a strong and believable legend to cover your work. X could have said Y and Z were workers he vaguely knew who he met by chance and had been urging them to join the trade union. Point B. The underground network and membership must be secret. X had no need to refer to Y and Z as the good guys, drawing attention and suspicion towards them. Point C. Behave naturally and don't draw attention to yourself. Y and Z behaved suspiciously by leaving abruptly. Point D. No loose talk. Follow the saying. Don't trust anyone and talk as little as possible. X fails at this. Point E. Be vigilant against informers. Can X be so sure of his relative? Point F. Be disciplined, effective, and punctual. X was none of these. Wait a maximum of 10 minutes at a meeting place. Latecomers may have been arrested. Point G. Make preparations beforehand and avoid patterns of behaviour which makes it easy for you to be tailed. X made poor arrangements, rushed from a sensitive place, could have been followed and used a venue he's used too often. Point H, know only what you have to know for carrying out tasks. Point I, be careful what you say on the phone. It may be bugged. Or in public spaces where you can be overheard. Conceal sensitive information with code names or words. Keep phone conversations brief, even on a burner. Point J, remove all traces of illegal work that lead to you. Wipe fingerprints off objects, especially if you're already in police databases. Pay in cash. Do not carry non-essential documents on you. Delete apps such as Signal off your devices prior to meeting or going somewhere, etc. Point K. Hide illegal materials and weapons, etc. But not where you live. Memorise sensitive names, addresses, etc. Do not write them down. Point L. Where needed, carry reliable documentation and ID. Point M. Know your town or city like the back of your hand. Its streets, its parks, its shops, etc. This will help you find secret places and check if you're being followed. Point N. If arrested, you must deny all secret work and never reveal the names of your comrades, even to the point of death. Remember, being a traitor to the working class, fate worse than death. Point O. If any member of your cell is arrested, you must act on the assumption that they will be forced to give up information. This means taking precautions, such as changing secret places, abandoning safe houses that person knows of, or going into hiding if necessary. When the rules and methods of secrecy are followed, revolutionaries make good progress. Practice makes perfect. With vigilance and discipline, the ruling class can be outwitted, and we can win. 4. Surveillance. Point A. What is surveillance? Simply put, an organised form of observation on suspected persons or places. There's generally two types of surveillance, mobile and stationary. Mobile, referred to as tailing or shadowing, involves following a subject or suspect. Stationary entails observing the subject, his or her home or workplace from a fixed position, typically from a parked car or building. Effective surveillance combines both mobile and stationary. Point B. Counter-surveillance. Used to protect members and the underground network. Counter-surveillance can establish whether you're being watched or followed. Counter-surveillance methods can be used to give state security services the impression that you're not involved in secret work. Point C. Aims of surveillance. The primary aim is to gather information about the subject to assess if they are linked to secret work. State security services will seek to establish links between the subject and who they may be working with. They want to identify you and locate residences and secret places you use. They'll collect evidence to build this case that you are involved. Point D. Decisions for surveillance. These are taken at high level. The decision will include the intensity and duration, 8, 16 or 24 hours per day over 1, 2, 3 or 4 weeks. This will involve placing the subject's home, workplace and other frequented locations under observation and having their phone tapped temporarily or permanently. The number of persons involved will be decided upon and they'll be given known facts, a description and photograph, as well as any other additional information. They'll also be told how to end the surveillance with arrest, continuation of observation, or a total end of surveillance. Point E, the surveillance team. Those carrying out surveillance are specially trained, plainclothes agents and officers. Their identities are kept secret. They're typically aged 25 to 50, though this can vary depending on who or what they are carrying out surveillance on. They will blend in to their environment. For example, a state agent wouldn't be wearing a three-piece suit to follow someone in a council scheme. A team may consist of 2 to 4 people with the support of a car. They'll communicate with both radios and hand signals. They have set plans for following, involving the interchanging of positions. It's vital to know these techniques. 5. Surveillance techniques. Various types of surveillance techniques are used to tail a subject. Foot surveillance. For the following examples, S will be our subject, whilst A and B, our agents or officers. A and B will use hand signals, radios and mobile comms to communicate, guide and assist each other. In crowded areas, they'll keep as close as 15 metres to S. In crowded streets, 100 metres. A car in the adjacent street may also be in use. For the following examples, please refer to the figures and graphics published in the comments of our Twitter or in the How to Master Secret Work resource. Point A. Two-man or AB surveillance. A is directly behind S, following them. B follows behind A, as if in a chain. A and B alternate positions, almost leapfrogging over each other. When S turns right at a corner, A drops back and B takes the lead. A may also cross the street. Now A is parallel to B and slightly behind. If A crosses the street onto the side of A, then A will either hang back, step into a shop, or swiftly walk past S. B will continue following from their side of the street. Through all this, they're avoiding eye contact with S. Point B. Three-man or ABC surveillance. The introduction of a third man, C, makes tailing S easier. In this scenario, A follows S, B follows A, and C follows on the other side of the street from S to the rear. When S turns a corner, A continues forward, crossing the street instead of turning, thus replicating C's position, whilst B or C take A's original position behind S. A variety of such techniques can be used, all with the same idea: keep S under constant observation without arousing suspicion. Remember, by knowing the methods of state security services, we can deal with them and outsmart them. Now, what about vehicles? Vehicle surveillance. Cars, vans, lorries, and even bikes can be used. These vehicles will carry no visible police ID. They'll be dependable and powerful, but not flashy. In heavy traffic, the vehicle will stay close to S. In quieter traffic, it'll hang back 2 to 3 cars behind. This vehicle will remain in the same lane as S to avoid making sudden turns. A tailing vehicle typically consists of 2 persons. The passenger is always ready to exit and proceed tailing on foot if S parks and exits their car. More than one vehicle can be used. 2 vehicle surveillance. Lead tail A will remain 2 to 3 cars behind S, and B will remain behind A, leapfrogging similar to foot surveillance. Using a parallel technique, B keeps pace in a parallel street. A and B will keep switching positions. 3 vehicle surveillance. A and B follow S in a chain. C follows in a parallel street. C may speed up ahead of S, waiting at a junction before falling in behind S, swapping positions with A. Reflectors and bleepers. Those conducting surveillance may try to place a strip of reflective tape on the rear of your vehicle or break your rear light. This makes it easier to spot and follow you at night. They may also place a bleeper or tracker on your vehicle. These are waterproof and usually placed in the wheel arch, under the rear bumper, or the inside of your petrol cap. Always check your vehicle. Progressive surveillance. Used when extreme caution is needed, S is followed for a limited distance by foot or car each day. Surveillance is picked up again at the time and place it was last dropped. 6. Counter-surveillance. We've been examining the enemy's surveillance methods. Now we turn to counter-surveillance, which is the methods we use to deal with enemy observation. For successful counter-surveillance, you need to be aware of your surroundings and be alert to what is going on around you. This means having thorough knowledge of the town or city in which you live and work in, knowing the habits of the people. You need basic common sense, alertness and patience, together with cool and natural behaviour and a knowledge of certain tactics or ruses, both of which we'll talk about later. It's important not to draw attention to yourself by strange behaviour, such as constantly looking over your shoulder. You must guard against paranoia, that is, imagining that everyone you see is following you. It's necessary to develop powers of observation and memory so that you notice what is unusual and remember what you have seen. Study the normal situations where you live, work and socialise so as to immediately recognise anything out of the ordinary. Are strangers loitering in the streets? Are strange cars parked? They may be a distance away spying on you through binoculars. Do you notice such strangers or vehicles on several occasions in other parts of town? Have strangers moved into neighbouring houses or flats? Do you notice unusual comings and goings or suspicious movements at upstairs windows? Try to discreetly check who such people are. The enemy may have created an observation post in the house across the road or placed an agent in the flat next door to you. Be sensitive to any change in attitude to you by neighbours, your landlord or shopkeeper. The enemy might have mobilised them for surveillance. Know such people well, including the local children who play in the streets, and be on good terms with all of them. Then, if strangers question them about you, they will be more inclined to inform you that they've been asked. Know the back routes and concealed entrances in your area so that you may slip in and out unnoticed. Secretly check what is going on in the vicinity after pretending to retire for the night. Avoid peering from behind the curtains, especially at night from a lit room. This is as suspicious as constantly looking over your shoulder and will only alert the enemy to conceal themselves better. Record all unusual incidents in a notebook so you can analyse events and come to a conclusion. Be alert with people you mix with at work or socially, and those like receptionists, supervisors, waiters and attendants who are well placed to notice one's movements. Phone tapping can also cause faults. Check with neighbours whether they're having similar problems, or is your landline the exception? Is your post being interfered with? Check the dates of posting, stamp cancellation and delivery, and compare the time taken for the delivery with your friends. Examine envelopes to check whether they have been opened or glued down in a clumsy manner. Some of these checks do not necessarily confirm that you're being watched, but they alert you to the possibility. In order to confirm whether you're in fact under observation requires techniques of checking, which we'll examine shortly. 7. The check route. This is a planned journey, preferably on foot, which you can carry out a number of discreet checks to determine whether you're being held under surveillance. These take place at predetermined checkpoints. This route will cover a distance of 3 to 4 kilometres, including activities such as shopping, inquiries, catching a bus, having a coffee, and more, and should last 1 hour. The route should consist of quiet and busy areas whilst holding a valid reason for your movements. If your actions are strange, it'll be you who arouses suspicion. For the following examples, refer to the figures on Twitter or the How to Master Secret Work document. What follows is an example of a typical check route. If your city or town is quite condensed, then the shortage of space would obligate you to confine the checkpoints into smaller areas than would actually be the case. Checkpoints in this diagram are numbered 1 to 12. Point 1. X walks down the street and pauses at a cinema to examine the posters. This gives a good chance to look back down the street and to notice those passing by without looking over their shoulder. Point 2. X crosses the road, looking right and left, and pops into a large shop. X positions himself near the entrance whilst appearing to examine the goods on display. From here, he notices anyone entering after him. X wanders around the store, using lifts, stairways, and escalators, in order to spot anyone paying specific interest to him. When leaving, X departs at a side exit. Point 3. X crosses the street into a little used alleyway. Here, he slightly picks up speed and crosses the street. Point 4. On this side of the street, shops with large plates of glass windows gives X a good reflection of the alley from which he's just emerged. From here, X is able to notice whether anyone is coming out of that alley to catch up with him. X now proceeds down the street into a bookshop with a commanding view of the street he's just came down. He browses around, noticing anyone entering after him. He also observes whether anyone examines the books he's just been browsing. For a tail would want to check whether X has left a secret message behind for a contact. X makes a small purchase and exits. Point 6. X enters a park and walks along winding paths which give him a good view of his rear. Point 7. X then throws away an empty cigarette pack and retires to an outdoor cafe where he takes his tea. X observes whether anyone picks up the cigarette pack, which a tail would want to do so, just as he did in point 5. From here, X notices the customers arriving after him. Any tail would want to check whether X is meeting someone. As X leaves, he notices whether any of the customers are eager to leave immediately after him. Point 8. X crosses the street into a post office. Once inside, he's able to observe whether anyone is crossing the street from the park after him. He buys some stamps and notices anyone queuing behind him. A tail will be specifically interested in transactions taking place in post offices, banks, etc. X may also make a phone call at a public phone box and check whether anyone attempts to overhear his conversation. Point 9. On departing, X stops a stranger in the street to ask him the way. This allows him to check whether anyone has followed him out of the post office. A tail would also show interest in this stranger who might be X's contact, and a member of the surveillance team might follow this stranger. Point 10. X continues down the street, turns sharply at the corner, and abruptly stops at a cigarette kiosk. Anyone following him will most likely come quickly around the corner and could become startled on finding X right in their path. Points 11 and 12. X crosses the street and joins the queue at a bus stop. Noticing those joining the queue after him, a bit of acting here and there gives the impression that X is unsure of the bus he wants to catch. He could allow a couple of buses to go by, noticing anyone who's doing the same as a bus arrives at the stop across the road. X suddenly appears to realise it's his and dashes across the road to catch it as it pulls away. X is alert to anyone jumping in the bus after him and will also pay attention to whoever gets on the next few stops. Such a series of checks must be carried out immediately prior to any sensitive appointment or secret meeting. If nothing suspicious has occurred during the check route, X proceeds to his secret appointment or mission. If, on the other hand, X has encountered certain persons over and over again on the check route, he will assume he is under a surveillance and break his appointment. Bear in mind that anyone following you, even professionals, may become indecisive or startled should your paths unexpectedly cross. A check route should always be carried out from time to time to check whether a person is clean or not. 8. Check route with assistance and by vehicle. So, now that we know what a check route is, let's examine it with assistance from comrades to make the exercise more effective. The exercise follows similar lines as previously outlined, except that a comrade is stationed at each checkpoint and observes whether anyone is following you as you pass by. It is essential that your behaviour appears normal and does not look as though your checking is taking place. Once again, please refer to the diagrams and graphics highlighted in the How to Master Secret Work resource or on our Twitter comment thread. So, let us suppose that you are X and comrades Y and Z position themselves at checkpoints. Comrades Y and Z position themselves at checkpoints Y1 and Z1 respectively. These observation points must give a good view of your movements, but keep the comrades hidden from enemy agents who might be tailing you. After X passes each checkpoint, the comrades move to new positions, in this case Y2 and Z2. They may in fact cover 4 to 5 positions each, and the whole operation could take 1 to 2 hours over an area of 3 to 4 kilometres. Comrades must take up each position in good time. Such checkpoints could be Y1. From inside a coffee shop, Y gets a good view of X entering the bank opposite. Z1. Z is in a building, a roof garden, a balcony, or an upper floor window, watching X's progress down the street and into the bookshop. Y2. Y has moved into a park and observes X wanderings from a park bench among the trees. Z2. Z has time to occupy a parked car in the car park, with a good view of all movements. After the exercise, Y and Z meet to compare notes. What suspicious individuals have they observed? Were such noticed in X's vicinity on more than one occasion? Was their behaviour strange? Were they shown unusual interest in X? Did they take up observation points when X entered the bank or bookshop? Did they go in to check what he was up to? Was a vehicle following them in support? And were persons from the vehicle taking it in turns to follow X? Such persons are more easily noticed and remembered in quiet rather than busy areas. Remember, in order to carry out secret work, you must know whether you're under surveillance or clean. 10. Checking by car. There are many ways of countering enemy surveillance when using a vehicle. Be extra observant when approaching your parked car and when driving off. This is the most likely point at which tailing may start. From your home, work, your friends, meeting place, be on the lookout for strange cars with at least 2 passengers, who will usually be males. When driving off, be on the lookout for cars pulling off after you or possibly following you from around the corner. Bear in mind that the enemy may have 2 or 3 vehicles in the vicinity linked by radio or telecommunication. They will try to follow you in an interchanging sequence, the so-called ABC technique that we discussed earlier. Cars A, B and C will constantly exchange positions as so to confuse you. Ruses. After driving off, it is a usual procedure to make a U-turn and drive away in the opposite direction, forcing any surveillance car into a hurried move. As you proceed, notice vehicles behind you. Your rearview mirror is your best friend. Also, pay attention to vehicles travelling ahead, which may deliberately allow you to overtake them. Cars waiting ahead of you at the junctions, stop streets and by the roadside must be noted too. You will often find vehicles travelling behind you for quite a distance, particularly on a main road or a link road. Avoid becoming nervous and overreacting. Do not suddenly speed ahead in the hope of losing your tail. Remember that the point of counter-surveillance is to determine whether you are being followed or not. Instead of rushing ahead, travel at a normal speed and then slightly reduce your speed, giving normal traffic the chance of overtaking you. If the following vehicle also reduces speed, then begin to accelerate slightly. Is that vehicle copying you? If so, turn off the main road and see if it follows. A turn or two in a quiet suburban street or a rural area will establish whether you have a tail. There are plenty of other ruses you can use to determine this. You could A. Drive completely around a roundabout as though you've missed your turn off. B. Turn into a dead end street as if by mistake. C. Turn into the driveway of a house or a building and out again as if in error. D. Abruptly switch traffic lanes and unexpectedly turn left or right without indicating, but be sure there's no traffic police about. E. Cross at a traffic light just as it turns red. Such ruses will force a tail into unusual actions to keep up with you, but your actions must appear normal and not frantic. Check route. The check route that we previously described can be done on foot, but can be applied to vehicles also. Your check route must be well prepared and should include busy and quiet roads. Also include stops at places such as garages, shops, or anywhere where you can carry out some counter-surveillance on foot. You can carry out this routine by yourself or with assistance. In this case, comrades are posted at checkpoints along your route and observe whether you are being tailed. At all costs, avoid looking over your shoulder, a highly suspicious action. Enemy tracking devices. You must always check your car for tracking devices. These are small, battery-operated, typically magnetically attached devices that emits a directional signal to track your movements. When you stop for some time, those observing you will be curious. This may force them to look for you. So your check route should involve stopping in a quiet or remote area. Get out of your car and into a hidden position. From there, you can observe any follow-up movements. If you have assistance, stop your car at a pre-arranged spot. Your comrade should drive past and check whether a tail vehicle has halted just out of sight down the road. 11. Cutting the tail. Cutting the tail is the procedure of eluding those tailing you. Where you need to break surveillance, you deliberately lead those tailing you to a favourable spot when cutting the tail can be achieved. For this to work, you must study the location or area this can be done at. Point 1. Change of clothing. You urgently need to visit an underground contact. For several days, your attempts have been frustrating because you've come to realise that you're being closely watched and followed by agents. You leave work as usual, but carry a shopping bag with a change of clothes. After casually wandering around your town, you enter a cloakroom or such places where you can quickly change clothing without being seen. It should be a place where other people are constantly entering and leaving from. You leave within minutes, casually dressed in a t-shirt and a sports cap. Your shirt, jacket and tie or other workwear are in your shopping bag. A busy area makes it easier to slip away unnoticed. A reversible jacket, a pair of glasses and a cap kept in a pocket are useful aids for a quick change on the move. Women in particular can make a swift change of clothing with ease, slipping on a wig and coat or even a man's hat and jacket over a pair of jeans to confuse the tail. Point 2. Jumping on and off a bus. You're being tailed, but must get to a secret meeting at all costs. You could spend some time loitering around a busy shopping area, giving the impression that you're in no hurry to get anywhere. Just as you notice a bus pulling away from a bus stop, you run after it and jump aboard. Keeping a good lookout for your pursuers, you could jump off it as it slows down at the next stop and disappear around a busy corner. Point 3. Crossing a busy street. You need to be quick and alert for this. You deliberately lead those following you down a busy street with heavy traffic. When you notice a momentary break in the traffic, you could suddenly sprint across the road as though your life depended on it. By the time the tail has managed to find a break in the traffic and cross after you, you could have disappeared in any number of directions. Point 4. Take the last taxi in the rank. Occupy your time in a leisurely manner near a taxi rank. You could be window shopping or drinking a tea at a cafe. When you notice that there is only one taxi left at the rank, drop everything and sprint over to it. By the time those following you have summoned up their support cars, you could have ordered the taxi to stop and slipped away round the corner. Point 5. Entering and exiting a building. a large, busy shopping centre with many entrances, stairways, lifts and floors is ideal for this. After entering the building quickly, slip out by another exit. Busy hotels, restaurants, leisure centres, railway stations, arcades and large pubs are all useful locations for this trick. Point 6. Ruses when driving. It's more difficult to cut the tail when driving than when on foot because there are a number of vehicles may be following you in a parallel street. Fast and aggressive driving is necessary. Sudden changes of speed and direction, crossing at a traffic light just as it turns red, and a thorough knowledge of lanes, garages and places where a car may be quickly concealed are possible ways in which you may elude the tail. Point 7. Get lost in a crowd. It's particularly difficult for the tail to keep up with you in crowded areas. Know your locality and be prepared. Be quick-footed and quick-witted. Be ready to take advantage of large concentrated populations of people. Workers leaving a factory, spectators from a football fixture, crowds at a market, cinema, railway station or a rally offer all the opportunities you need. Mix this with the above tactics and you will give those trying to tail you a headache and disappointment they so richly deserve. 12. Secret communication. This is absolutely vital. Without effective secret communication, no underground revolutionary movement can function. It is the most vital pillar, yet can also be its most vulnerable point. The state, their police, informers and all other agents are intently watching known suspects, socialists, activists and communists. They are looking for the links and contact points between such activists which will give them away. It's often at the point when such activists attempt to contact or communicate with one another that they are observed and their would-be secrets are uncovered. The state security services watch closely and see who contacts who, then pounces, rounding up a whole network of activists and their supporters. But there are many methods and techniques of secret work, simple but special forms of communication available to revolutionaries to overcome this key problem. In the next few sections of this episode, we will explore secret communications further in order to improve and perfect them. These forms of secret communication are used worldwide, including by the state security services, so we're giving nothing away through this episode. Rather, we're attempting to arm our people, our class. These methods are designed to outwit the enemy and to assure continuity of work. The qualities required are reliability, discipline, punctuality, continuity and vigilance, which spells out efficiency and communication. Before proceeding, however, let us illustrate what we're talking about with an example. C, a member of an underground unit, is meant to meet A and B at a secret venue. C is late and the two others have left. C rushes around, trying to find them at their homes, workplace, favourite pubs, etc. C tries phoning them and leaves a message. C is particularly anxious because he has urgent information for them. People start wondering why C is in such a panic and why he is so desperate to contact A and B, who are two individuals whom they had never before associated with C. When C finally contacts A and B, they are angry with him for two reasons. Firstly, he came late for the appointment. Secondly, that he violated the rules of secrecy by openly trying to contact them. C offers an acceptable reason for his late coming. He could prove that his car broke down and argues that he had urgent information for them. He states that they had failed to make alternative arrangements for a situation such as one of them missing a meeting. Hence, he argues he had no alternative but to search for them. That example is familiar to most activists. It creates two problems for the conduct of secret work. It creates the obvious security danger as well as leading to breakdown in continuity of work. So, what methods are open to such a unit or between two activists? To answer this, we'll be studying two main areas of communication. These are personal and non-personal forms of communication. Personal forms of communication are when two or more persons must meet under special conditions of secrecy. there are various forms of personal meetings, such as regular, reserve, emergency, blind, check, and accidental. There's also various forms of non-personal forms of communication designed to reduce the frequency of personal meetings. Amongst these are such methods as using newspaper columns, public phone boxes, the postal system, radios, and the method made famous in spy movies and films, the so-called dead letter box, or dead drop, where messages are passed through secret hiding places. Coding, invisible ink, and special items are used to conceal the true or hidden meaning in messages or conversations. From this, we can immediately see a solution to C's failed meeting with A and B. All they had to arrange was a reserved meeting place in the event of one or more of them failing to turn up at the initial venue. This is usually at a different time and place from the earlier meeting. The other forms of meetings cover all possibilities. 13. Personal meetings. The most important requirement for an underground network is to meet secretly and reliably. But how can this be accomplished? Let us suppose that Comrade A has the task of organising an underground unit with B and C. In the interest of secrecy, they must, as far as possible, avoid visiting one another at home or at work. First of all, they need to have a regular or main meeting, let's say every 2 weeks. For this meeting, A lays down three conditions. These are place, time, and legend. Place of meeting. This must be easy to find, approach, and leave. It must be a safe place to meet, allowing privacy and a feeling of security. A friend's flat, office, a large public park, a scenic spot, a bench, in a car, etc. These possibilities go on. It is essential that the meeting place be changed from time to time. Sometimes, instead of indicating the meeting place, A might instruct B and C to meet him at different contact points on the route to the meeting, such as outside the cinema, bus stop, etc. This can provide a greater degree of security, but is best to begin with the most simple arrangements. Time. Date and time of the meeting must be clearly memorised. Punctuality is essential. If anyone fails to arrive at the meeting place within the prearranged time, the meeting must be cancelled. As a rule, the time for waiting must never exceed 10 minutes. Under no circumstances must a comrade proceed to the meeting if he or she finds himself under surveillance. Legend. We've discussed this previously, remember? But just to re-jog your memory, here is what it is. The legend is an invented but convincing explanation and cover story as to why A, B and C are always together at the same place at the same time. The legend will depend on the type of people who are meeting. Suppose A and B are black and C is an older white woman. Since it would look unusual and attract attention if they met at a park or picnic area, A has decided on an office which C has loaned from a reliable friend. They meet at 5:30 p.m. when the office is empty. C has told her friend that she requires the premises in order to interview some people for a job or some story to that effect. On the desk, she will have interview notes and other documents to support her story or legend. And B and C will carry job applications or references. If anyone interrupts the meeting, or if they have been questioned later, they will have a convincing explanation for their meeting as well as any supporting material. Order at the meeting. At the start of the meeting, A checks on the well-being and security of each comrade, specifically whether everything was in order on their route to the meeting. Did they check for possible surveillance? Next, A will inform them of the legend for the meeting. Then, before business is discussed, A will explain the time and place of the next meeting. This is done in case they are interrupted and have to leave the meeting in a hurry. In such an event, they already know the conditions for the next meeting and continuity of contact is assured. Reserve meeting. In arranging the regular meeting of the unit, A takes into account the possibility of one or more of them failing to get to the meeting. He therefore explains the conditions for a reserve meeting. These also include place, time and legend, whilst the time for a reserve meeting may be the same as a regular meeting, but obviously on a different day. The place must always differ. A instructs them that if a regular meeting fails to take place, they must automatically meet 2 days later at such a time and place. The conditions for a reserve meeting might be kept constant, not changing as often as those regular meetings, because the need for such a meeting may not often arise. But A takes care to remind the comrades of these conditions at every regular meeting. A feels confident that he has organised reliability and continuity of such contact. It is necessary for all to observe the rules of secrecy and to be punctual, reliable, disciplined and vigilant about these meetings. But what if Comrade A needs to see B and C suddenly and urgently and cannot wait for the regular meeting? 14. Emergency and check meetings. As previously mentioned, Comrade A has arranged regular and reserved meetings with B and C. This has been progressing well. Comrade A decides to organise other forms of meetings with them because of the complexity of their work and clandestine conditions. Point 1. Emergency meeting. The comrades have found that sometimes they need to meet urgently between their regular meetings. An emergency meeting is for the rapid establishment of contact should the comrades need to see each other between the set meetings. There are similar conditions as for the regular meeting, such as time, place and legend. The additional element is a signal for calling the meeting. This signal might be used by either the unit leader, A, or the other cell members when they need to convey urgent information. A confirmation signal is also necessary, which indicates that the call signal has been seen or understood. This must never be placed at the same location as the call signal. But what are signals? These are pre-arranged signs, phrases, words, marks or objects put in specified places, such as on objects in the streets, on buildings, etc. Or specified phrases in postcards, letters or on the telephone. What follows is an example of an emergency meeting and the steps taken. Comrade A has directed that the venue for the unit's emergency meeting is a certain park bench beside a lake. The time is set for 5:30 p.m. on the same day that the call signal is used. As with regular meetings, he also indicates a reserve venue for the emergency meeting. Comrade A arranges different call signals for B and C, which they can also use if they need to summon him. Now let's look at the call and answer signal for B. This signal could be a chalk mark placed by A on a certain lamppost. Comrade A knows that B walks past the pole every morning at a certain time on his way to work. B must always be on the lookout for the chalk mark. This could simply be the letter X in red chalk. By 2 p.m. that day, B must have responded with a confirmation signal. This could be done with a piece of coloured string wound round a fence near a bus stop. It could also be a piece of blue chalk crushed into the pavement by the steps of a building or some graffiti scrawled on a poster. The two comrades can now expect to meet each other at the park bench later that day. But what about C's call and answer signal? C has a landline at home. Before she leaves for work, Comrade A phones her from a public phone box or via burner. He pretends to dial a wrong number. He may say something along the lines of, "Good morning, is that Maryhill Milk Deliveries?" C then replies, "Sorry, wrong number," and adds, "Not such a good morning as well, as you've got me out the bath." This is C's innocent way of confirming that she has understood the signal. It goes without saying that these signals should never be repeated. Point 2. Check meeting. This is a meeting between the unit leader and a subordinate comrade to establish only through visual contact whether the comrade is okay. Such a checkup becomes necessary when a comrade has been in some form of danger or where direct physical contact is unsafe to make, such as if the comrade has been questioned by the police or been under surveillance. There are a number of conditions for such a meeting: date and time, place or route of movement, actions, legend, signals, all indicating danger or well-being. What follows is an example of a check meeting. C has been arrested and questioned by the police. As a result, contact with her has been cut off. After a few days, Comrade A wants to check in how she is and calls her through a signal to a check meeting. At 4 p.m. on the same day, following the call signal, C goes shopping. She wears a yellow scarf, indicating that she was subject to mild questioning and that everything has appeared normal since. She follows a route which takes her past the post office by 4:20 p.m. She does not know where A is, but he has taken up a position which conceals his presence and gives him a good view of C. He's also able to observe whether C is being followed. On passing the post office, C stops to blow her nose. This is to reinforce her feeling that everything is now normal. It's for A to decide whether to restore contact with C or to leave her on ice for a while longer, subjecting her to further checks. 15. Blind meeting. The leader of an underground unit, Comrade A, receives instructions from the leadership to meet Comrade D. Comrade D is a new recruit whom the leadership are assigning to A's unit. A and D are strangers to one another. Conditions are therefore drawn up for a blind meeting. A blind meeting is a meeting between two underground workers who are unknown to one another. But how do they recognise each other and how do they communicate? They do this through recognition signs and passwords. There are similar conditions as for regular and other forms of meeting, such as date, time, place, action of subordinate, and legend. In addition, there is the necessity for recognition signs and passwords, which are to aid in identification. The recognition signs enable the commander or senior, in this case Comrade A, to identify the subordinate from a safe distance and at close quarters. Two recognition signs are therefore needed. The passwords, including the reply, are specially prepared words and phrases which are exchanged and give the go-ahead for the contact to begin. These signs and phrases must look normal and not attract attention to outsiders. What follows is an example of a blind meeting. But please, do remember, all the examples given in the How to Master Secret Work series and this podcast episode are also read and listened to by our enemies. Do not be stupid enough to blindly copy them. With that said, take note of this following example. Place: toy shop on Smith Street. Date and time: December 20th, 6 p.m. Action: Comrade D to walk down the street eastwards to stop at a toy shop and gaze at a toy display for 5 minutes. Legend: D is simply walking about town carrying out window shopping. When A makes contact, they are to behave as though they are strangers who have just struck up a friendship. Recognition signs: D carries a Tesco shopping bag with the letters TESS underlined with black pen for close-up recognition. The passwords will be pre-arranged. Certain words, phrases, or conversational topics that are specifically designed for comrades to be assured that the person they are meeting is in fact the contact. As the unintroduced comrades meet at the location, with knowledge of the recognition signs, they will go through the repertoires of the passwords. A strikes up the conversation. "Pardon me, but do you know whether this shop sells children's books?" B replies, "I don't know, there are only toys in the window." A: "I prefer to give books for presents." Now take note, the opening phrase will be used by A after he's observed D's movements and has satisfied himself that the recognition signs are correct and that D has not been followed. A completes the passwords with a closing phrase which satisfies D that A is the correct contact. The two would then walk off together, or A might suggest a further meeting somewhere else. But this isn't the only way to meet an unknown contact. Meeting an unknown contact can also be done through a brush meeting. This is a brief meeting where material is quickly and silently passed from one comrade to another. Conditions for such a meeting, such as place, time, and action, are carefully planned beforehand. No conversation takes place. Money, reports, or instructions are swiftly transferred. Split-second timing is necessary, and contact must take place in a dead zone, i.e. in areas where passing the material cannot be seen. For example, as D walks down the steps of a shopping centre, A passes D and drops a small package into D's shopping bag. An accidental meeting can also be used. This is a deliberate contact made by the commander, which comes as a surprise to the subordinate. In other words, it takes place without the subordinate's foreknowledge. An accidental meeting takes place where 1. There's been a breakdown in communication, and 2. The subordinate is not fully trusted and the commander wants to have an unexpected talk with him or her. The commander must have good knowledge of the subordinate's movements and plan his or her actions before, during, and after the meeting. 16. Non-personal communication. Comrade A has been mainly relying on personal forms of communication to run the underground unit, with the police and state security services stepping up their search for revolutionary activists. He decides to increase the use of non-personal communication. These are forms of secret communication carried out without direct contact. These do not replace the essential meetings of the unit, but reduce the number of times the comrades need to meet, thereby minimising the risks. The main forms of non-personal communication are telephone, postal system, press, signals, radio, and dead letterboxes. The first three are in everyday use and can be used for secret work if correctly exploited. Signals can be used as part of other forms or as a system on their own. Radio communication will be used by higher organs of the movement and not by a unit like A's. The dead letterbox is the most effective way of passing on material and information without personal contact. Comrade A introduces these methods cautiously because misunderstandings are possible. People prefer face-to-face contact, so confidence and skill must be developed. Telephone, post, and press. All of these can be vital and reliable forms of secret communications if, and only if, they are used properly. If used carelessly, especially given the advancement in technology and modern state spycraft, then these methods can lead to arrests. State security services can easily trace calls from known devices and postal letters intercepted too. International communications can also be easily traced, and are more likely to, given the suspicion they arouse. The state security services of Europe continue to heighten their Cold War against the socialist state of China, so direct calls from UK-linked numbers to Beijing will arouse suspicion or interest. What is required are safe phones and addresses, through which can be passed innocent-sounding messages for calling meetings, re-establishing contact, warning of danger, etc. Point 1. Telephones. Technology has advanced at rapid pace since the publication of the South African Communist Party's How to Master Secret Work resource. Calls can be easily traced, phone records and activity can be accessed quickly, and data can be retrieved from smartphones. With this, it may seem that any form of telecommunication is unachievable. However, this is not the case, and it can be done, but only by being cautious and thorough. Be sure to note, any phone call you make from a device registered to you will be immediately traced back to you. How you communicate through a phone depends on a number of factors, such as, are you under surveillance? Irregular communications from comrades you wish to contact, encryptions, etc. The use of digital devices, how to use them, the dangers, etc. deserves its own episode, perhaps one we might cover this year. With that being said, we'll maintain the following example, laid out in the South African Communist Party's How to Master Secret Wars resource, on the basis that a public payphone is being used by Comrade A. In today's world, with the slow elimination of payphones, a burner phone would most likely be used. Telephone. This allows for the urgent transmission of a signal or message. The telephone must be used with a reliable and convincing coding system and legend. Under no circumstances must the phone be used for involved discussion on sensitive topics. Comrade A has already used a phone to call C to an emergency meeting. The arrangement was that he pretended to dial the wrong number. This was the signal to meet at a pre-arranged place and time. Up to now, he's been meeting with her to collect propaganda material. He now wishes to signal her when to pick it up herself, but prefers to avoid phoning her at home or at work. If she takes lunch regularly at a certain cafe, or is at a sports club at a certain time, or near a public telephone, he knows how to reach her when he wishes. A simple call such as the following is required. Is that Miss Jane Doe? This is John here. I believe you want to buy my Ford Escort. If so, you can view it tomorrow. This could mean that C must collect the propaganda material at a certain place in 2 days' time. The reference to a car is a code for picking up propaganda material. John is the code name for the pickup place. Tomorrow means 2 days' time. 2 days' time would mean 3 days. Post. This can be used to transmit similar messages as above. Again, this requires caution, as state security services could be monitoring your post or mail. A telegram or greeting card with the message that Uncle Morris is having an operation could be a warning from A to C to cut contact and lie low until further notice because of possible danger. The use of a practical kind of picture postcard could be a signal for a meeting at a pre-arranged place 10 days after the date on the card. Signals can be contained in the form the sender writes the address, the date, or the greeting. My friend, together with the fictitious address of the sender, number 168 Fox Street, means to be ready for a leaflet distribution and meet at 16 hours on the 8th of the month at a venue codenamed Fox. Many such forms of signals can be used in letters. Even the way the postage stamp is placed can be a significance. Press. This is the use of the classified ad section. An example of Candy, I miss you. Please remember our anniversary on the 22nd. Love, Alan. This could be A's arrangement for re-establishing contact with C if she's gone into hiding. The venue and time will have to be pre-arranged, but the advert will signal the day. Such ads give many possibilities, not only in the press, but on notice boards, in colleges, hostels, shopping centres, and so on. 17. Signals. Comrade A has been introducing various forms of non-personal communications to his underground unit. At times, he has carefully used the telephone, post, and press to pass on innocent-sounding messages. Key phrases spoken and written have acted as signals for calling meetings, warning of danger, etc. He's also used graphic signals, such as a chalk mark in a lamppost, or an object like a coloured piece of string tied to a fence, as call and answer signs. Signals can be used for a variety of reasons and are essential in secret work. They greatly improve the level of security of the underground and help to avoid detection by the enemy forces. Everyday signals. The everyday use of signals shows how useful they are in conveying messages and what an endless variety exists. Road traffic is impossible without traffic lights, where colour carries the message, and road signs where symbols or graphics are used. Consider how hand signals are used in different ways, not only to direct traffic, but for countless purposes, from sport to soldiers and patrol. Everybody uses the thumbs up signal to show that all is well. Consider how police and robbers use signals, and you will realise how important they are for understanding work. In introducing this topic to his unit, Comrade A asked them to give examples of everyday signals. You may wish to pause here to have a think yourself. For our purpose, signals will be divided into type and usage. Point 1. Type. Sound. Voice. Music. Whistle. Animal sound. Knocking. Etc. Colour. All the colours of the rainbow are at your disposal. Think about all the colours you could use. Graphic. Drawings, figures, letters, numbers, marks, graffiti, other symbols, etc. Actions. Behaviour. Movement of a person or a vehicle. Objects. The placing or movement of anything from sticks and stones to flower pots and flags. Point 2. Use. To call all forms of meetings. To instruct people to report to a certain venue or individual. To instruct people to prepare for a certain task or action. To inform of danger or well-being. To indicate that a task has been carried out. To indicate a presence or absence of surveillance. To indicate recognition between people. Whatever signals are invented to cover the need of the unit, they must be simple, easy to understand, and not attract attention. What follows are some examples of signals and how they can be used. And keep your ears open. And one of these examples includes something which is bad from a security point of view. See if you can spot it as you listen along. Point 1. Comrade A draws a red arrow on a wall to call B to an emergency meeting. 2. Comrade D whistles a warning to Comrade C, who is slipping a leaflet under a door, indicating that someone is approaching. 3. Comrade B stops at a post box and blows his nose, indicating to Comrade A, observing from a safe distance, that he is being followed. 4. Comrade D hangs only blue washing on his clothesline to indicate that the police have visited him and that he believes he is in danger. 5. Comrade B enters a hotel wearing a suit with a pink carnation and orders a bottle of champagne. These are signals to Comrade C that he should join him for a secret discussion. 6. Comrade C, having to deliver weapons to someone called Esther, who he's not met before, must park her car at a rest spot venue on the motorway. C places a tissue box on the dashboard and drinks a can of Iron Brew. These are the recognition signals for Comrade E to approach her and ask the way to the nearest petrol station. This phrase and a Mickey Mouse keyring held by E are the signs which show Comrade C that Comrade E is her blind contact. 7. Comrade C places a strip of coloured sticky tape inside a public telephone box to inform Comrade A that she has successfully delivered weapons to Comrade E. So, what was the bad example? Pause here and take a quick minute to think about it. If you've guessed correctly, it's Comrade D. But why? D's pink carnation and champagne draws unwanted attention. Passers-by in the hotel would notice something, and the staff especially. 18. Dead letter box. Comrade A's underground unit has been mastering forms of non-personal communication to make their work secret and efficient. Comrade A feels they now have sufficient experience to use the DLB, sometimes called the dead drop, to pass literature, reports, and funds between one another. But first, what is a DLB? It's a hiding place, such as a hollow in a tree, or the place under the floorboards. It is used like a postbox to pass materials between two people. To give a definition, a dead drop is a natural or man-made hiding place for the storage and transfer of material. It can be a large space for hiding weapons or small messages. It can be located inside buildings or outdoors. In a town or countryside, it can be in natural places such as the tree or floorboards, or manufactured by the operative, such as a hollowed out fence pole or a hole in the ground. It is always camouflaged. Selecting the dead drop. It's very important to carefully select the place where the dead drop is to be located. Point 1. It must be easy to describe and find. Avoid using complicated or confusing descriptions which make it difficult for your partner to find it. Point 2. It must be safe and secure. It must be well concealed from casual onlookers. Beware of places where children play, gardeners work, or those with drug and alcohol addictions loiter. It must not be near state security buildings or places where guards are on duty. It must not be overlooked by buildings and windows. Point 3. It must allow for safe deposit and removal of material. The operatives must feel secure about their actions in depositing and removing materials. They must be able to check whether they are being watched, and the place must be in keeping with their public image and legend. Point 4. It must allow for weather conditions and a time of day. Dead drops can be exposed or damaged by rain or flooding, especially here in Scotland. Some locations may be suspicious to approach by day and dangerous by night. Preparation. This involves constructing and camouflaging the dead drop, making a diagram, working out a signal system and security arrangements. If you are burying the material, put it in a tin, bottle or weatherproof container, especially if one of the items in your dead drop are a USB stick. Point 1. Once you've selected the place for your dead drop, you will have to prepare it. This will usually take place under the cover of night, whether you're digging a hole or hauling out a cavity in a tree and camouflaging it. Point 2. You will have to make an accurate description, preferably including a simple diagram. Point 3. You will have to work out a signal system for yourself and partner, indicating deposit and removal of material. Point 4. Finally, work out a check route to and from the dead drop and a legend for being there. What follows is an example of the dead drop. Be sure to keep your notepad and pen close and refer to the diagrams in the How to Master Secret Work series or once again in our Twitter comment thread. Comrade A has spotted a loose brick in a wall. The wall is located along a little used path and shielded by trees. At night, he hollows out a space behind the brick, large enough to take a small package. The loose brick is the 10th along the wall, second row down. The brick fits securely into the wall, but can be quickly removed with the use of a nail. The operation takes 10 seconds and the footsteps of any stranger approaching can be easily heard. Comrade A's description of the dead drop. Comrade A's reference will be loose brick and wall. Its location, path leading from 4th Street to golf course. The direction, in 4th Street, just past the 61 bus stop, is the path with red brick wall on the right. Wooded fence on the left, 3 paces down the path on the right, just before a tree, is the dead drop in the brick wall. The dead drop is a loose brick with a white paint smudge. As you walk down the path from 4th Street, it is the 10th brick along the wall, second row from the top. And the space between this brick and the 9th brick is a hole. Place a nail into this hole to help prise out the brick. The space behind the brick holds a package wrapped in plastic with dimensions 12 by 6 by 3 centimetres. After removing the package, replace brick using blue tack or other sealing substance to hold it in place. The signals. 1. After A deposits material, he ties a piece of red string to a fence, signalling that the dead drop is loaded. 2. After B removes the material from the dead drop, he draws a chalk mark signal on the pole. Be sure to note, signals must not be in the dead drop's vicinity. So how would they carry out this operation? Let's break it down by the actions of the comrades. Comrade A. 1. Prepares the material, packaging and camouflage. 2. He checks the route for surveillance. 3. He observes the situation at the dead drop. 4. He places the material if there's no surveillance. 5. Return route to check for surveillance. 6. Places a signal indicating the deposit. 7. Returns home. Comrade B. 1. Sees the signal of deposit. 2. Checks the route. 3. Observes the situation at the dead drop. 4. Removes material, if no surveillance. 5. Return route to check for surveillance. 6. Places signal of removal. 7. Returns home. Comrade A. 1. Checks signal of removal. 2. Removes signals. 3. Reports success. It is vital that both comrades A and B check that they're not being followed when they go to the dead drop and after leaving it. 19. Stationary, portable and mobile dead drops. So, we've discussed the use of a dead drop, but there's more than one type of dead drop. These are as follows. Point 1. Stationary dead drops. These are fixed places such as camouflaged holes in the ground or a hollowed out tree, just as what we were referencing at the previous chapter. Point 2. Portable dead drops. These are containers which can be carried and left in innocent places to be picked up discreetly, such as a discarded cigarette pack, hollowed out stick or a fake rock. Point 3. Mobile dead drops. These are different types of transport. Cars, buses, trains, boats, hell, even a plane. These can be used to communicate between operatives who live far apart. Point 4. Magnetic dead drops. A simple magnet attached to a container can increase the opportunities for hiding places. With the aid of magnets, you're able to clamp your dead drop to any metal object, such as behind a drain pipe, or under a railway bridge, or even under a vehicle. It's important to use a variety of dead drops. Never use a stationary dead drop too often, because this increases the risk of being spotted. The advantage of portable dead drops is that the place where it can be left can constantly change. Because of the danger of a stranger picking it up by chance, the time between making the drop and the pickup by your partner must be very, very close. 5. Portable dead drop, wooden stick. You could buy a piece of plastic tubing or pipe, cut off 30cm of length, glue pieces of bark around it to make it look like a twig. With a little patience and practice, you'll be surprised at how realistic you can make it look. Before you know it, you have a portable dead drop into which you can insert material. All that's left to do is work out a suitable location where it can be safely dropped for a pickup. You can carry it up your sleeve and drop it in long grass or into a bush near an easy to access reference point. It must be concealed from passers-by and nosy dogs especially. Alternatively, you can try hauling out an actual piece of branch or splitting it down the side and gluing it shut. Point 6. Portable dead drop, hollow rock. The exact same as the wooden stick. Patience and practice to transform it and properly camouflage it into a dead drop. Point 7. Mobile dead drop. Comrade A uses the Glasgow to Edinburgh train to send materials to comrades at the capital. There are numerous hiding places on a train, as with other forms of transport, and if you use magnets, the possibilities are increased. Removing a panel in a commuter train provides a useful hiding place. Comrade A does this long before the train's departure, before other passengers arrive, as not to draw attention to himself. He has a telephonic signal system with the Edinburgh comrades to indicate when the material is on the way and how to locate it. They might get on the train before it reaches Edinburgh. Whatever the case, the operational system must be carefully studied at both ends. 20. Failure and how to deal with it. This podcast episode and How to Master Secret Work series would not be complete if we did not deal with failure in the underground network and how to react to setbacks. Point 1. What do we mean by failure? When members of the underground network are exposed, arrested or killed, when the underground structure is broken or destroyed by the enemy, failure has occurred. Failure can be partial, where only some members are affected, or complete, where the entire network or machinery is smashed. Open failures are those that the enemy chooses to publicise. Concealed failures occur when the enemy succeeds in infiltrating the underground with its agents, but keeps this secret. In this case, they make no immediate arrests, choosing instead to obtain information over a long period. Point 2. Reasons for failure. There are numerous causes of arrests and setbacks. Violating the rules of secrecy is one of the main causes of failure. To carry out secret work successfully, everyone must strictly follow the organisational and personal rules of behaviour that have been outlined in this series and podcast episode. The most common violations of the rules are a failure to limit the number of links between persons, not keeping the principle of vertical lines of communication, failure to isolate different organs from one another, poor discipline, poor recruitment practices, failure to use codes and conceal real identities, weak legends, poor preparation of operations and meetings, violating the rule of knowing only as much as you need to know, not using the standard methods of personal and impersonal communications, and inadequate preparations of comrades for arrest and interrogation so that they reveal damaging information. Point B. Weak knowledge of the operational situation. This means not paying sufficient attention to the conditions in the area where you carry out your tasks. Comrades are often caught because they fail to study the methods used by the enemy, the time of police patrols, guard systems, the use of informants, etc. Mistakes are made if you fail to take into account the behaviour of local people, cultural mannerisms and habits, forms of dress, etc. Knowledge of political, economic, geographic and transport conditions are part of the operational picture. Point C. Weakly trained and poorly selected operatives. The underground can only be as strong as its weakest member. Poorly trained leaders result in weak leadership, weak communication links and poor training of subordinates. This leads to wrong decisions and incorrect behaviour throughout the structure and a whole series of mistakes. Care and caution are the key to the selection of capable leaders and recruitment of operatives. Point D. Weak professional, political and personal qualities. Serious shortcomings in the qualities required for underground work can lead to failure. For example, a comrade who is sound politically and has good operational skills but who drinks heavily or gambles can put the whole machinery of underground networks at risk. Similarly, a person with good professional and personal qualities but who is politically confused can be the cause of failure. And a person with good political understanding and fine personal qualities, but who has weak operational capability, is best used for legal work. Point E. Chance or accident. An unlucky incident can lead to arrest, but it is the least likely cause of failure. So how do you prevent failure? By following the principles and rules of secrecy greatly reduces the possibility of failure. Prevention is better than cure. But when failure occurs, we must be ready and armed with the plans and procedures for dealing with the situation. 21. Detecting and localising failure. When the principles and rules of secrecy are poorly applied, failure and arrest follow. The main dangers come from infiltration by enemy agents or the arrest of comrades in operations. Detecting failure means to be aware of the danger in good time. Localising failure means to act in order to quickly contain the crisis and prevent the damage spreading. The following are the main points to consider. Review the machinery. It is only possible to detect and localise failure if the underground has been built on a solid basis according to the correct organisational principles. A study and review of the structure, lines of communication and the personnel is an essential part of secret work. But it becomes impossible to obtain a clear picture if the underground has been loosely and incorrectly put together and is composed of some unsuitable persons. In such a situation, it becomes very difficult to correct mistakes and prevent infiltration. A network which is tightly organised, operates according to the rules of secrecy, and is cleared of unsuitable operatives is easier to review and manage. Check suspects. This is part of the work of reviewing the machinery. It must be carried out discreetly so as not to alert the enemy or undermine the confidence of operatives. You should carry out the following. Review the suspect's behaviour, movement and performance. Check with co-workers, friends and family. Carry out surveillance by the security organ after exhausting the other checks to determine whether there are any links with the police. What follows are some tactics of the enemy agents. They try to win your confidence by smooth talk and compliments. They try to arouse your interest by big talk and promises. They try to get information and names from you, which is no business of theirs. They try to get you to rearrange lines of communication and contact points to help police surveillance. They may show signs of nervousness, behave oddly, and show excessive curiosity. They may pressure you to speed up their recruitment or someone they've recommended. They ignore instructions and fail to observe rules of secrecy. Bear in mind, good comrades can be guilty of lapses in behaviour from time to time, and agents can be clever. So don't jump to conclusions, but study the suspect's behaviour with care and patience. Sooner or later, they will make a mistake. Finally, localising failure. This involves two things: acting against infiltration when it is detected, and acting against exposure of the machinery and preventing further arrests, capture of documents, materials, etc. Point A, acting against infiltration. The severity of action will depend on the stage reached and the danger posed. The enemy agent may be cut off without explanation, politely cut off, with a good believable pretext, frozen, told they are not being involved because they are being held in reserve, arrested and taken out of the country as a prisoner. Point B, avoiding arrest. The moment it's known that a comrade has been arrested, those whose identities he or she could reveal must immediately go into hiding. Most arrests take place because this rule is ignored. Even if it is believed that the arrested comrade is unlikely to break, this precaution must be observed. Everyone must have an escape plan. This includes an early warning system, assistance, safe hiding place, funds, transport, a disguise, new documents, an identity. Endangered comrades may lie low until the threat passes or work in another part of the country or even leave the country. All links must be cut off with a comrade who has come under enemy suspicion or surveillance. In this case, the comrade may be put on ice. All documents, incriminate material, etc. must be destroyed or removed from storage places known to the arrested comrade, including from his or her house and place of work. All comrades must be instructed on how to behave if arrested. They must refuse to give away their fellow comrades and strive to resist, even under torture. The longer they resist, the more time they give their comrades to disappear and get rid of any evidence. Everything must be done to help the arrested comrade by providing legal representation, publicity, food and reading material if possible, solidarity with their family, organising protests, etc. And with that knowledge, and all the knowledge in this resource, with constant study and slow implementation, you will master secret work. Thanks again, comrades, for tuning in to another episode of Spectre. As always, be sure to leave us a like and review on whatever platform you're tuning in from. And of course, share us with your friends, comrades, co-workers, and everyone else in between. And be sure to give us a follow on our Twitter account. We are nearly at 1,000 followers. We hope you've enjoyed this project and that the lessons learned by South African communists, the London recruits, and the many other international volunteers who took part in the fight against apartheid have inspired you. These lessons stand as a testimony to the organised might of the working class, showing that a disciplined force, a vanguard, can truly outwit some of the most highly intelligent, highly funded, and highly ruthless state security services in the world. History has shown us that when the capitalist class has their back against the wall, they will do everything they can to suppress the workers' movement. They'll outlaw parties, arrest members, and even sentence them to death. This is why knowing how to run an underground network and to carry out the rules of secrecy are vitally important. No matter where we are, wherever we stand in the world, as communists, we must be prepared to do the dirty work. not just visibly on the street, but underground beneath its catacombs as well. By knowing secret work, we know how to win. And when we win, we will build a future. A socialist future. A communist future.